Hello and welcome to this episode called Adolescence 101, recorded as part of the Parenting Support Program for parents of teens aged 12 to 17. This program, ELIS, was developed by Boscoville in partnership with the Montreal Public Health Department, Réseau Réussite Montréal, and the associate researcher Marie-Ève Clément from the University of Quebec in Outaouais. I'm Chanel Zadra, a deployment agent at Boscoville, and we're pleased to welcome Sasha McNeil, psychologist. Thank you, Sasha, for accepting our invitation. Tell us a bit about your work and what you do.
Hi, Chanel. Yeah, thank you so much for having me. So I'm a child and adolescent psychologist, and I work with adolescents often and their parents who may be looking to work through some challenges, sometimes in their relationships, sometimes in other parts of their lives. So that's a big part of what I do. Also, at the same time, I'm a postdoctoral researcher at McGill University, which means that I do research also. And my research really focuses on how social relationships, including those with parents, are really important for child and adolescent mental health.
To get us started, what can you tell us in general about adolescence and what defines this period?
Yeah, there's been a lot of thinking about adolescence since the last century. Going back, you know, throughout most of the 1900s, adolescence was really considered to be a period of storm and stress, during which parents and teens themselves were kind of told to expect more conflict with parents, more disturbances in mood, and more risky behavior. The problem with that perspective is that it really assumes that negative behaviors are going to be expected and typical for everyone. But really what we know from more recent views and research is that it's false to expect that all adolescents are going to experience a storm and stress. There are some changes in adolescence that are going to be inevitable. For example, puberty is inevitable, changes in hormones, changes in sleep rhythms, other changes in the brain. All these are expected and going to occur for everyone. But then there are other changes like changes in behavior, changes in mood, and changes in relationships that are going to vary across adolescents based on their different contexts. So really, as adolescents begin expanding their social networks, they start building new relationships with peers, building new relationships with peer groups. The role of friends becomes really important in adolescence. But there are also a lot of changes in terms of how adolescents think compared to when they were children. So I'd like to introduce, you know, a fictional family, maybe two parents and their son, Alex. So what might parents start to notice as Alex progresses through adolescence? Well, Alex is going to become better at considering multiple perspectives. He's going to start thinking about hypothetical outcomes a lot more. And this is really exciting because it means that their son can be a lot more creative. He can be a lot more involved in problem solving. And he's going to be better able to consider many options and make his own decisions. And then as Alex kind of continues evolving and maturing, he might also increasingly ask himself questions like, who am I? What's my role in this situation or my family or in the world? And as he's asking himself those questions, he's going to want to become also more autonomous and independent in planning his future and making his own choices. And so all these skills and all these changes are really important for Alex to kind of prepare and develop into his adult roles. And what parents and adolescents can do together is really work together to progressively build that autonomy and that independence without going too slowly, because that can be really frustrating or babying for Alex, but also not going too fast because he's not yet an adult and he still has many things to learn and many changes to go through before he can be expected to be fully independent. So it's adolescents' job to figure out who they are, and parents can really observe that process in terms of the evolution and how the adolescent is thinking about themselves, what they like, how they think about the world around them, how they question authority maybe, how they're trying to form their own opinions, what's right, what's wrong, what I like, and also how they think about others and who they want to hang out with. So a lot of changes in adolescence.
So if I'm hearing correctly, parents' challenge is really to continue providing structure while gradually broadening it to allow this gain in autonomy. I'm hearing different changes in terms of social, biological, and especially the brain. Well, talking about the brain, what can you tell us about that?
Yeah, there are a lot of changes in both the number and the pattern of brain connections during adolescence. What's really particular about this time is that the changes in the brain, they happen at different speeds and at different times across different areas of the brain. So, for example, if we think about Alex's brain, the part of the brain that's responsible for emotional arousal, or maybe rather how intensely Alex is going to feel his emotions and how intensely his mind is going to react to situations, well, those parts of the brain tend to emerge much earlier in adolescence. They kind of form much earlier, connect much earlier in adolescence. There are other parts of his brain that are more important for regulation. Regulation is the ability to kind of notice and respond to these feelings and mind reactions so that they don't take over and control Alex. Well, these parts tend to emerge more progressively over time from childhood to adulthood. So in Alex's brain, there might actually be more sensitivity to experiencing these big emotions and these big reactions, but he's still developing the ability to manage these emotions and control these reactions. These brain changes also manifest in other ways in Alex's behavior. For example, Alex's brain regions that are involved in reward processing, or which means the feeling of pleasure that he gets from feeling rewards, these are fully developed by adolescence. So that means that Alex is going to be really motivated to seek new things, seek excitement, seek novelty, because his brain really likes that and really responds to that. And that may be really positive, like maybe Alex is going to find something that he loves doing. Maybe he really enjoys going to La Ronde and riding on the roller coasters, and that really satisfies that excitement that he's looking for and that his brain is looking for. Mm-hmm. On the flip side, for some people, maybe Alex or maybe other adolescents, that same desire for excitement and novelty can also be a risk for more impulsive risk behavior, like engaging maybe in shoplifting or unprotected sex or trying alcohol. These different behaviors all kind of come from the same underlying need for the adolescent brain to have those really rewarding experiences with high excitement and high novelty.
Now that we understand what's really happening in the brain, how can we help our teens go through this period of many changes?
That's right. We've talked about a lot of the changes that adolescents go through in this time, and parents play a huge role in supporting these changes. So I think first things first, I really want to strongly encourage parents to show interest in their teens' lives. You know, ask them questions about what they like, spend time doing fun things together, you know, explore each other, explore that relationship, because it's really important to build that strong foundation of love, trust, and good communication. That's going to be the foundation for how parents can better support their teens afterwards. At the same time, though, parenting can't all be fun and games, and parents do have the responsibility of providing a safe and a structured environment at home. What does that mean, safe and structured? Well, it means that there are clear expectations about what everyone's role in the family is and how we do and don't treat each other. And what's really key is that these roles do have to be renegotiated with Alex, for example, over time as he ages, because he can't be expected to have the same family role and set of rules at the age of 17 that he did when he was 12. Mm-hmm. So, for example, as Alex kind of goes into adolescence and progresses through adolescence, he may be expected to be more involved in chores or spend more time studying now that maybe he's in high school or maybe preparing for cégep. Alex may also have his own expectations about being allowed more time outside of the family and more time with his friends. He may also expect more independence in how he organizes his time and schedule, for example, how late he sleeps, when he goes out, who he sees. And so kind of everyone's role in this situation, in this time period, are changing, right? Roles and responsibilities are evolving both for Alex and his parents. And so how can parents explicitly be involved in supporting these changes? Well, it's important for Alex's parents to name the clear expectations that they have of Alex over time as they change, and also make it clear how Alex's parents will adapt their own behaviors too to meet Alex's own expectations of them. And so if Alex and his parents discuss these expectations together and then everyone's on the same page, we've kind of got a good foundation for things to go more smoothly.
Now, talking about providing structure, as parents, we have to set boundaries, right? But we have to let them experience autonomy, and it seems contradictory. How do you strike that balance and navigate that with your teen?
You're right. It really does feel like setting boundaries and building autonomy are totally opposites. But I really do like to see them more as two sides of the same coin rather than two opposites. So parents can help set boundaries and build autonomy through a process called scaffolding. So I'd like you to think of scaffolding around buildings under construction, when the structure really helps to hold the building up until the building is assembled and can hold itself up. So when we're parenting an adolescent, when let's say we've had these conversations about our expectations and family roles and responsibilities, well, all this is kind of like the blueprint to independence and to building that building of autonomy. And so parents can really help their adolescents learn how to meet these expectations progressively. So, for example, let's think about Alex at 12 years old. He may be asked to complete a new chore every week, and he may need a few reminders at first to do the chores, or he might need some reminders about how to do the chore even. So this is an example of scaffolding where the parents can support Alex over time in building his autonomy in that chore, but eventually Alex won't need that scaffolding anymore, those reminders anymore. So really throughout this period, parents are involved in providing structure or scaffolding in order to progressively build that building of autonomy. Maybe here's another example of scaffolding that I like. Let's say Alex doesn't have a curfew as a child because, you know, his parents take him everywhere. But now that he's 12 years old, his parents think that maybe it would be helpful to have a curfew because Alex really wants to spend more time with his friends in the evening. And at the same time, his parents want to make sure that Alex is home at a reasonable hour and is safe. So Alex and his parents may have a conversation about setting a curfew. And it's going to be really important for parents and Alex together to discuss what they each would like about the curfew, how late, why, and then come to an agreement together about when the curfew is going to be, how it's set, how it's enforced. So now that Alex is also more involved in the decision-making, it's important that his point of view really be understood and integrated, but also in a way that's reasonable and aligns with the expectations of his parents. If we think about scaffolding in this situation, based on his maturity and what parents and Alex think are reasonable, maybe they agree on a 9 p.m. curfew at first when he's 12 years old.
Interesting.
This is the initial scaffold or the initial structure. And then when the family kind of has a shared understanding of this curfew and Alex shows over time that he's honest and responsible and able to meet that structure and meet that curfew, maybe as he gets older, the curfew gets renegotiated to 10 p.m., 11 p.m., 12 a.m., mm-hmm. and so on and so forth until kind of the scaffolding doesn't need to be there anymore and Alex has shown himself to be autonomous and independent in his responsible decision-making.
So I'm hearing this part of having a discussion and there might be a bit of negotiation involving our children in this decision-making process, right?
Yeah, absolutely. If we remember those changes that are happening in adolescence, Alex is not going to be satisfied in being told what to do and how and why, because as his brain develops, he has the need to understand things and he's also developing his own point of view. And it's going to be much easier for everyone to kind of consider each other's perspectives, negotiate what works best in the context of the family. And it's not that Alex should have the whole say, but neither should his parents. And it's really a question of collaboration and how best we can kind of mutually support each other in enforcing these responsibilities and roles in the family.
Well, sometimes interactions with our teens can get tense or emotionally charged. When those moments happen and we start noticing disrespectful behaviors, how can parents respond in a way that's both helpful and constructive?
Yeah, it can be really challenging as a parent to respond to teenagers when they're being disrespectful or when they're feeling really emotionally charged. In these situations, I like to think about the 3R strategy, where the 3 R's are regulate, relate, and resolve.
Interesting.
So, yeah. So I want to think about a situation maybe where Alex hasn't been doing his chores in the last week, and it's coming to a confrontation when he's just told his parents, he's screamed at them that he doesn't care and he hates them and he hates their silly rules. So in this situation, we can understand that Alex is probably feeling really angry about having to do his chores. And so in this situation, I want us to think a little bit about Alex's brain, what's going on in his brain. Alex's thinking part of his brain is actually kind of quote unquote disconnected from his feeling part in the brain. And so what that means is that Alex's emotional brain is totally in control, totally angry. And his thinking part, which maybe in other situations would help him not react so impulsively or kind of be able to manage that emotion. But right now, those two parts are totally disconnected. And he's not able to take control over that emotion. In that situation, it may be really tempting for parents to say, well, you need the chores because X, Y, Z, like we've talked about this, you know that this is how we expect you to behave, mm-hmm. right? And to give more explanations and give more justifications for why he has to do it. But because his brain is so amped up and his thinking brain is actually offline right now, Alex won't really be able to understand what his parents are saying to him, even if what his parents are saying to him makes total sense. And also, parents may also be feeling themselves really amped up and really angry about the situation, too. So this is where the 3 R's come in. The first step for everyone in this situation is to take some time to bring their thinking brains back online and regulate. So it takes a lot of self-regulation from parents to manage their own impulses, to shout, to discipline, to punish in these situations. And so it can be really helpful to start with taking just a few deep breaths or taking a few minutes alone in a separate room to get more control over their own emotions before responding to Alex. And then parents doing that can also maybe model the strategy to Alex himself. Maybe over time he can start using that strategy too if he sees his parents do that.
That's interesting, yeah.
So with the regulate, the goal is to bring the intensity of the emotions down and maybe to a place where everyone can feel able to have that conversation, where everyone feels more in control of their emotions, and at least that thinking part in the brain is a little bit back online so that we can talk. So this brings in the next step, the second R, relate. Parents here can probably relate to and understand how Alex is feeling. Even if they don't agree with how he's behaved, we can all agree that it's acceptable or allowable that Alex feels angry about having to do chores, but that it's not acceptable to be screaming, using strong language, or not doing his chores. Mm. And so with this second R, maybe Alex's parents can tell him or relate to him that they understand that he's had a lot of homework lately and that he wants to go out with his friends instead of doing chores and that it's really frustrating for him to spend his little free time at home doing chores. And so just showing, you know, an act from parents of relating like that can be really helpful to continue bringing down the emotional intensity for Alex and for themselves and also help positive and open communication between Alex and his parents in that moment. This also sets the way for our third and our last R, which is resolve. So it's not acceptable to act poorly towards others just because we feel really angry, even if others can understand and relate to how we feel. So this last step is where we look at resolving the situation. Remember that impulse to kind of justify and explain that we might have it first? Well, this is actually the last step here with resolve. So in this case, it's possible that Alex and his parents maybe review the expectations, why there are chores, why his parents are requesting that he does his chores before leaving to see his friends. And this is where we try to plan for how we're going to resolve this situation. Alex may also try to negotiate. Maybe his parents are open to negotiation, right? Like maybe, okay, like you can spend however much time with your friends and do your chores when you come back, but it's going to be non-negotiable when you come back. So parents can decide what's reasonable for them or acceptable for them. And maybe his parents are going to be open also to Alex asking for help with his chores when he's feeling really stressed. So these are all kind of examples of how we can problem solve with an adolescent in this moment to try to plan the situation and maybe also plan for future solutions the next time that this happens. How are we going to handle this situation the next time? So really, I tend to use these three R's, regulate, relate, resolve, as the blueprint for how to navigate conflict or these really high intensity emotions as a good example of how parents can also set boundaries and promote that autonomy.
This is great insight, Sasha. Thank you. We'll keep in mind those three R's, regulate, relate, and resolve, while keeping the communication open. With that in mind, during adolescence, teens start exploring more outside the family, especially through friendships. How do you see a parent's role evolving during this phase?
It's true that there are so many changes in adolescence, and it can really feel like teens are expanding outside of the home and into all these other areas of their life that are growing, right? Like their friendships, maybe school, activities, maybe even part-time jobs. They're also figuring out who they want to be, who they are right now. And so This expansion outward doesn't really mean, though, that the family environment becomes any less important. In fact, all these changes that adolescents go through, including also changes in parental expectations in the home, can also be really stressful for adolescents. They experience a lot of pressures to become more independent, all these competing new responsibilities that they have to learn, and that can be really hard. So maybe it's possible, for example, that Alex feels really uncertain about what decisions to make, how he may find all these new responsibilities and expectations. Maybe they're really difficult to manage for him. And so even if the world is expanding for Alex, parents are so important for helping him navigate that expansion outside the home. So they can have conversations with Alex about how to tackle these challenges, how to tackle these responsibilities, right? And that's also kind of a form of scaffolding. So for example, let's say Alex is feeling really stressed with all the studying he has to do. Maybe he's also soon leaving for his first job as a counselor and he's going to be away all summer and he's feeling really worried about being gone. Maybe he wants to chat with his parents about how he's going to tackle his studying, how he's going to manage being away, how he's going to stay in touch with his friends and family. And maybe his parents have thoughts on how good he'll be at managing these responsibilities that they can tell him to reassure him. Or maybe they can help him prepare for potential scenarios where things could get more difficult. And so even if Alex's world is expanding outwards, parents have a really big responsibility in maybe making suggestions or giving support in order for them to manage that outward expansion. And that outward expansion becomes so much more manageable when they know that they have a strong support system that they can rely on at home.
Great point, Sasha. So what I'm hearing is that parents play a central role still in their teens' lives while still providing safety, providing boundaries and structure in their lives. We're already at the end of this interview. We've covered a lot of really relevant topics so far. But before we wrap up, what are the key messages you'd like parents to take away from our conversation?
I really want for parents to see themselves as an important figure in their teens' lives. Even if their teens' life is expanding outwards and sometimes it feels like maybe they're not so involved as they used to be, that parents remain a really important anchor that allows this flourishing and this growing towards independence, even if it doesn't feel that way. And I also want parents to remember that there are important tasks that they can provide, like providing that structure in order to support autonomy. Remember that these two actually go hand in hand and aren't opposites. Mm-hmm. And that also communication is going to be really important throughout this whole process to both get their adolescent on board with their expectations, get them on board with their adolescent's expectations, and really build that kind of family team that's going to effectively bring their adolescent towards independence.
So the parents are not losing importance. They're really an anchor in their children's lives, right?
Absolutely.
Well, thank you, Sasha. It was a real pleasure to hear you talk about the theme of Adolescence 101.
Thank you for having me.
I hope the topics we discussed together were also helpful to you, dear parents listeners. For more information about adolescence and related challenges, feel free to explore the different topics and tools of the ILIS 1217 program.
Phonique. Le fin son de l'histoire.